Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Triangulation is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Triangulation episode 347 for Friday, May 18th, 2018. Ian Bernstein, Misty Robotics. This episode of Triangulation is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? ZipRecruiter has revolutionized how you do it. Their technology identifies people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job. They find great candidates for you. Try it for free today at ZipRecruiter.com/triangulation. And by FreshBooks, the ridiculously easy-to-use cloud accounting software helping small business owners thrive. Try it free for 30 days at FreshBooks.com/triangulation. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Triangulation. I'm Jason Howell here on a Friday morning, and I've been looking forward to this morning because, I mean, you're probably already familiar with this, the future that we live in, right? Things that when I was younger, you know, I'd watch the Jetsons and I'd see Rosie, the robot, rolling around. And I'd think, wow, that's like a symbol of the future. Flying cars is another one. I'm not sure, you know, how far along we are on that. But robots are happening. And obviously, I don't know if you noticed, but I've got a little robot sitting right next to me. This is the Misty 2, compliments of founder and head of product at Misty Robotics, Ian Bernstein. How's it going, Ian?
It's going very well. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you for coming out. You're actually in the area because you're going to Maker Faire, and I'm pretty sure I know exactly why you're going to be bringing your Misty 2 robot along with you. I'm sure you're looking forward to the chance to kind of bring the public into what you've been working so hard on.
Yep.
So you were on actually with Leo on Triangulation March 21st, 2016. So a couple of years ago. This was episode 242. And then it was, the focus was really around Sphero, which you are also responsible for Sphero. And I'm sure a lot of people watching or listening that may have missed that interview are probably very familiar with the Sphero. We've had it on the network multiple times. Are you still, like, with the new Star Wars movies that are coming out, is there still kind of like that direct relationship on new droids and that sort of stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I saw a few around your office here. You guys got R2-D2 and BB-9E. Mm-hmm. Lots of fun stuff. Yeah, it was incredible working with them on those products.
I'm sure. I have to imagine also kind of a learning experience working with such a storied franchise like Star Wars. Yep. Did that relationship kind of open up new ideas and avenues that have informed things like the Misty 2 at all?
Yeah, I mean, it was absolutely BB-8 that sort of led to Misty. It was a lot of the personality and character. So I spent a lot of time in China the first few years of Sphero doing manufacturing work. And it was 2012 when I spent 6 months there that year. And, you know, you start to lose touch with the company just because there's such a time difference. And I would talk to a few people, but we thought maybe we could make a low-cost telepresence robot. So when I got back, my co-founder at Sphero, Adam Wilson, and I, we took a Raspberry Pi and we actually prototyped. We were, you know, thinking it could be like a $500 telepresence robot, but it didn't feel right. It didn't feel like a Sphero product. Something wasn't there. So we put it on the shelf. And as we were getting BB-8 out, and we saw how people started creating this connection with the robot because it had such a strong personality and story, we thought back to that sort of more advanced robot that we had prototyped and thought, well, no, it shouldn't be a telepresence robot. It should be a robot with personality and character that maybe also does a telepresence. And that's really when we kicked off this project within Sphero.
And when you're talking telepresence, like when I think of telepresence, I think of being able to like look at a screen and see somebody on the other side. And are you talking telepresence in the sense that the robot has a personality in and of itself and that the kind of the features on the front is your mirror into this robotic personality?
Well, originally it was more like you first described. Tool. Yeah, communication. Yeah. Like you could dial up your robot and you could drive it around and have a conversation because, you know, when I was in China, I would have a conversation with a few people, but then, you know, I'm not going to set up a time to talk with everybody.
Sure.
you know, I just wanted to take a stroll around the office and just say, hey, what's up? Like, what are you doing this weekend?
Mm-hmm.
That kind of thing.
Virtually place yourself in the office if you can't be in there in the physical sense. We had something, I don't know, maybe Carson, you remember this. It was years ago. It was a big, it was on wheels essentially, and it was basically a big iPad stand. And you put the iPad in there and you could, you know, load up FaceTime or whatever. And at our old studio, which is where you were the last time you were on the show, it was not too unfamiliar to see this roaming iPad on a stand with somebody's face that wasn't actually in the office that day,
right,
roaming around. Of course, it had its own issues. The wheels would get caught on the cables that we very often have strewn about the studio, and it would, you know, slow it down or topple it or whatever. So there are challenges there. I'm sure you would face those challenges
even with
a smaller form factor.
Well aware of all those challenges.
Well, that's cool. So, So we got Sphero, obviously a really big hit. Do you have more of the Sphero development, like the evolution of Sphero as like a smaller robotic product? How is that developing out, and what are kind of the plans there?
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty much 100% involved in the new company, Misty,
sure,
which we spun out of Sphero about a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, lots of really cool stuff coming out from Sphero, especially on the education side.
Yeah.
That's going very well, and lots of other cool products that I've seen prototypes of. But yeah,
even without your connection to it, it's great to see something that you are so close to build it up and see it take on a life of its own.
Yep.
And you're talking about education as well. Obviously, your new product that we're going to dive into really deep today, the Misty 1 and the Misty 2. There's an education component to that. What and I know you had a very rich childhood around robotics. You were fascinated. Is that kind of where this interest in informing and educating around this sort of stuff comes from?
Yeah, and it was interesting when we started working on this project of Misty. We were originally trying to think of what the killer application for robots would be, like the
sure,
first thing that we could build. What's the killer thing? And we got in this crazy circular thought process of never really, it was like a new thing every week. We'd think, what could we build that would be cool and useful for people? Is technology even available today to implement it?
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of ideas broke down there. And then how much would it cost and would people actually pay for it? And other than vacuuming, we couldn't come up with anything.
There's no vacuum in the bottom of the Misty 2, right?
Right. But you could add it. So we added lots of expansion ports and stuff.
Awesome.
But then we thought, like, how did some other industries get started? And we looked at the computer industry a lot and realized that robotics today is very similar to the computer industry was back in the 70s. And that you couldn't really do a lot with a computer. It took developers several years building off of sort of the Apple II class of computer, you know, because when the Apple II first came out, it booted up and there was a cursor.
Right.
And you had to, like, you know, flip to page 11 of the Red Book and type out the whole program.
What now?
So it wasn't for everybody, right?
Yeah.
And it took a few years to get all those applications out, but it was those developers. So that's the direction we started going down. And then I thought back to when I was about 5, my dad, I mean, we grew up in the middle of nowhere. My dad was a musician. We didn't have really, I mean, we were quite poor.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, he bought an Apple IIe, and it was probably the biggest purchase our family made growing up. So I called him, and I was like, well, you know, he's not a tech person. Like, why did you do, like, this is kind of crazy to spend that much money on a computer. And he said, well, I bought it for you. I saw computers and I thought this would be the future and I wanted you to know about them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're in that same point today with robots, that you think kids that are 5 now in, you know, 14, 15 years when they're going to college, robots are just going to be that much more important.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, you're right. 10, 15 years down the line, especially when you consider the fact, and I think your example of kind of the personal computers back then and robotics now is perfectly appropriate in the sense that, you know, robots 10 to 15 years, air quotes, robots. I mean, they existed, but it was a really simplified, at least on the consumer side of things, it was nothing more than a piece of plastic that sat on top of something that moved it from one place to another. It didn't have that expanded sense of knowledge. And I mean, right now, you know, we're seeing this explosion in artificial intelligence, and that's opening up new avenues that I have to imagine is going to accelerate what is even possible with a robot and maybe match us up to what our perspective of what a robot could do when we were younger, watching the Jetsons as one example, match it up to that being possible. We're at the very beginnings of that stage.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's so much technology now that we can start to build a robot that does useful stuff for us.
Yeah.
And it's a couple different things that are coming together. One is the technology with natural language processing.
Absolutely.
We're seeing great products like the Amazon Echo. And things like computer vision, where we can, in real time, with enough computing power within the robot to do interesting things and recognize objects in its environment, which gives a lot of context to the robot. But also it's often overlooked is the consumer readiness for certain things, because you hear about all kinds of companies, right, that are ideas for products, and then somebody will come over and they'll be like, we made the exact same thing 10 years ago and it failed, right?
Why are you so lucky?
Right.
That it's working now. Yeah, exactly.
But there is that sort of readiness of, sure, of people to adopt certain products. And it is often overlooked, but I think we're ready for this type of product because people are familiar with the Amazon Echo and this voice interaction, and now let's make a robot that can actually manipulate things in the world.
Yeah, that really seems to be, you know, what my mind it was jumping right to as I was hearing you kind of bring that point, is that we are growing accustomed to not pausing when we have to talk to a machine. I even remember, I mean, as recent as like 3 or 4 years ago, before it was, you know, before Google Now, or let's say right when Google Now was beginning, it was really disconcerting for me to realize that, yes, I can control this device, this piece of technology with my words, and that should be so easy because I talk every day to people. But for whatever reason, my mouth and my brain cannot work to communicate it the syntax that is required for the computer to understand me. And it took a while, and it's taken a while for people to understand how to do that, first of all, and feel comfortable with that. But then also for the companies that are creating that technology, and thanks to AI, to really understand how to make things more conversational from the computer side of things. And so that's just opening up all these avenues. And yeah, it really seems like we're ready for that sort of thing. Maybe what we're not ready for yet, and this will take some time, is having a robot share space with you, right? We see our space as our space. What do you think about that? Because that's a big hurdle.
So a lot of what I think about in that area is, you know, people ask me, are you building or going to build humanoid robots?
Right.
And I have no desire to build necessarily a humanoid robot. We're not trying to build, you know, robot humans.
This isn't Black Mirror.
Right. But the environment and everything we live, you know, our houses and our offices and everything is designed for people. It's designed for, you know, generally our heights and arms and things like that. So, mm-hmm. You know, we're probably not going to fully customize our environments of the future for robots. Robots are going to need to exist in environments that are designed for us. And because of that, I think robots of the future will have sort of human-like properties.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe things like arms, and maybe they just happen to be about the same length as a person's arm. Just, again, because our environment is designed for that.
Sure, sure. Well, that's fascinating stuff. I love that we're entering this phase where these are conversations that actually don't feel quite so science fiction, you know what I mean? But there's a lot of challenges around that, you know, unintended circumstances, you know, again, you know, going back to AI, we were seeing a lot of those questions and those ethical questions kind of come to the surface right now. And in some degrees, you only begin to answer those by starting to build up the ecosystem around that. And that, you know, that is absolutely seems to be what the Misty 1 and then what we have here, the Misty 2, is all about, building not just a robot, but an ecosystem around the robot. Let's talk about that. We're going to kind of dive into the Misty 1 and then, of course, the Misty 2 and kind of talk about some of the differences and how developers can get on board with this. But before we do that, let's take a minute and thank the sponsor of this episode, and then we'll jump right in. This episode of Triangulation is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. If you happen to be hiring, every business, as you know, needs great people, and finding those people is the challenge. You need a better way to find them, something better than just posting your job online and then hoping, praying that the right person sees it. ZipRecruiter knew that there was a smarter way. There usually is. You just got to find it. So they built a platform that finds the right job candidates for you. ZipRecruiter learns what you're looking for, then identifies the people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job. These invitations have revolutionized how you find your next hire. In fact, 80% of employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just one day. And ZipRecruiter does not stop there. They even spotlight the strongest applications that you receive. They pick them out. They pick them out of the stack and make sure that you don't miss that great match. The right candidates are out there. ZipRecruiter is how you find them. Businesses of all sizes trust ZipRecruiter for their hiring needs. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. All you got to do is go to ZipRecruiter.com/triangulation. That's ZipRecruiter.com/triangulation. One more time, ZipRecruiter.com/triangulation. ZipRecruiter is the smartest way to hire, and we thank ZipRecruiter for their support of Triangulation. All right, so it was not very long ago. I think it was earlier this month that kind of the greater public learned about the Misty 2. Prior to the Misty 2 was the Misty, and here we have, you know, the Misty 2 with its beautiful eyeballs and all sorts of other things that we'll talk about. But prior to the Misty 2 is the Misty 1. Yep. And actually, this was announced in January, so not too much earlier. This was just a few months ago, and the developer edition. What was the goal of announcing the Misty 1 and then so soon after the Misty 2? Why the progression there?
Yeah, so the Misty 2 will be out in December, December 4th. Mm-hmm. It just takes a long time to build a manufactured product, you know, going to Asia and injection molding, and then just all of the software that has to go into it. And because we won't be really shipping until December, we wanted to get something out earlier to get some early feedback. We really want to build a community around Misty, mm-hmm. a community of developers or whoever really who are creating these skills for it. And again, we just wanted to get some early feedback so we could actually steer the development of the product of Misty 2. Other than us just talking to people or guessing, right? Let's get some actual people programming it, see what they create and see what they want next. And we've learned a lot of stuff already. You know, for instance, we learned we were focusing more on some other features, but we learned that people really want voice interaction with the robot as one of the very first things that they want to try out.
Well, so people are, like we said, accustomed to talking to technology now.
Right.
So it's kind of second nature.
So we did. Like, we put a lot more resources from our engineering team into that sort of voice interaction and getting that system up earlier for people. So it's already really paying off, and we love engaging with our customers and people building stuff. It's really cool.
Has it been a challenge kind of working with the voice side of things, you know, the learning? You know, there's a lot that goes into that. And I mean, you know, even, you know, big companies like Google are still working to get it right so that their voice detection, you know, their voice to text and that conversion happens accurately and responsively. Has it been a challenge for you? There's a lot to learn there.
Yeah, and one of our approaches is just to really open up the robot, allow people to do an experiment with a lot of different things, so we don't lock people down to maybe our own voice recognition system.
Sure.
Like, we let people put Microsoft's Cortana on the robot, or they could put Alexa on the robot, or Google Assistant. So we can try out different things. And then, of course, on the technology side, we're using basically the latest you can get from Qualcomm on their far-field microphone systems and their latest software so that it works from a technology perspective. But there is some challenges when it's not a static device on your desk and it's actually a mobile robot that, you know, perhaps makes sounds, motors are moving, and
right.
as the device is moving, it's harder for beamforming and things like that. So there are some additional challenges over, you know, a static device.
Right, almost need some sort of a noise reduction capability inside the microphones to know when the wheels are moving, when the motor's moving.
Yep.
This is what you remove basically from the signal so that it could actually hear your voice from across the room.
Yep.
And so you can have it bring you a beer. What kind of attention have you gotten in the last couple of months from developer interest? I mean, it sounds like from the way you're talking about the kind of the internal architecture, there are a lot of things that I imagine would be very familiar to developers. It's not like starting from square one. It's kind of reaching them where they already are.
Yep, exactly. And one of our goals with Misty was to really bring robots to people who aren't roboticists. And that was one of the main reasons that we chose JavaScript as being one of the main languages that we support. So that I was just reading the other day that JavaScript is known by 60% of developers worldwide. So it's probably the most used language, or one of the most used languages. So that mobile developers, people who don't know anything about hardware, web developers can actually build skills for a physical robot. Just like a mobile app developer doesn't have to know anything about how the iPhone is made.
Mm-hmm.
They're just in that software world. We wanted to open it up to all those people.
Awesome. Yeah, you were just showing, Carson was just showing the Misty One. And as you can see, very different look. I actually really look like the inside out sort of view of the robot. I'm sure it's appealing to developers because developers love that stuff to dive into here. So the internal structure, I mean, basically what we're looking at with the Misty One is the Misty Two, but with the kind of the more palatable consumer outside shell removed, essentially, right? Is there any other difference between the two?
Yeah, so it's probably about 75% the same between Misty 1 and Misty 2, although Misty 2 has a couple features that make it quite different. So one is the ability to self-charge.
Okay.
So Misty 2 can charge herself. There's a wireless charging pad that Misty drives on, and she uses her vision system to get on it so that she can basically always be on. So you can do those sort of like skills like telepresence,
mm-hmm.
where you could log into the robot remotely and have a call with somebody. The robot could be for security or, say, elder care, or just fun stuff like, you know, watch your pet, or like, I don't know, just the robot could just show up right now if you had one in your home and tell you a joke or something, if that's the skill you wanted, right? There's also arms, a lot more personality in Misty 2. So we have arms that are removable. You can put your own arm on. There's the backpack. So we have some stuff that we made. So I'm a hardware guy. My background is in electrical engineering.
Mm-hmm.
So I like creating all these fun things. So this is a backpack. It gets power. So the backpack of Misty just pops off. Stick it on, and actually, it should work
here. I'll rotate it so you can see here. There's the back of it.
Pop this on. You can see there's a laser. So the arm is just one screw, and you can pop off the laser arms if you want it to play with your pet.
So you would swap the arm for the laser arm.
Right.
Have your cat chase it around the living room. That's great. That is awesome. And do the arms just swivel in one direction, or can they go in multiple directions?
So right now it's just one direction, but you could also make different arms if you wanted.
Sure.
So you have one over by you, which is the gripper arm that I made the other day. So that adds a little gripper, and it's just one actuator. But you could also add...
Oh. Sorry.
No, that's fine.
And these are all 3D printed. And this is worth pointing out is when you're talking about, creating an ecosystem where people can kind of get in there and their imagination runs wild, largely this is even possible anymore because, you know, not only are robotics becoming more and more popular and the price is lowering and all that kind of stuff, but so are 3D printers, and so capable now.
Yeah, it's gotten so much easier to make stuff and just maker spaces.
Right.
I mean, we have one in, so we're in Boulder, Colorado. We have one 10 minutes away from our office where they have tons of equipment, laser cutters and 3D printers and all different kind of CNC mills and different equipment that anybody can just go take a class and learn how to use. So, yeah, we hope that people will expand the robot. Like you mentioned earlier, does it have a vacuum? No. But you could add a vacuum if you wanted.
Sure.
We do have like a little, it's kind of funny. There's actually a trailer hitch on the back.
I was going to ask about that. So, you know, and on the side it says for towing. And meanwhile, I'm getting a trailer hitch added to my actual car for a bike rack. I'm pretty sure you're fitting this with a bike rack, though. Like what things is it going to be able to tow? Or is that more like an expansion slot for hardware to mount to?
Right. It's more just like an expansion slot. So, yeah, that just pops off. It's again, magnetic.
Okay.
So we made a little trailer. So if you wanted to do deliveries, so because Misty has a navigation system, you could write a skill so that Misty waits at your office, reception area. The delivery guy comes in, he's like, hey, we have a package. Who is the package for? It could recognize the people's names in the office. They put the little package on the trailer and then Misty could deliver it.
That's fantastic. I love it.
And some of the stuff right now is a little bit novel for the robot, right? Some of the skills, you know, might not be the absolute like killer thing,
right?
We can start to prototype this, and this is how a lot of technology starts. It starts with some of these more novel applications, and then we Misty, the Misty 3, maybe it's a little bit bigger and it could actually do, you know, bigger packages, and it could be like a really awesome application. You know, that skill could be work really well for that application.
Sure, sure. And do you kind of envision, like, as developers are creating skills for the robot to work on, you know, based on in a way of thinking, let's say, like being able to communicate or being able to think. There's those types of skills, but then there's also kind of the hardware side of things, which requires, like we say, creating and printing out in a 3D printer. Like what about like how are developers going to share this? Or, you know, because I imagine they probably want to create something. Developers are just like this. They want to create something. They want to allow other people to hop on. I'm sure you would love that too. Is there a marketplace for them to share not only the software capabilities, but the hardware plans for 3D printers and stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. So right now it's just through our forums, our community forums. So if you go to community.mistyrobotics.com. You can exchange different ideas. Even if you don't have a Misty and you're just interested in technology or interested in robotics, people are already sharing ideas about things you can make.
Right. What about this? What about this?
Exactly. Okay. And they're sharing their GitHub repos and stuff for some of the skills that they're writing.
Sure.
But when Misty 2 comes out, we will be coming out with sort of the equivalent of an app store, a skill store for the robot, so that people can easily share the things that they're working on with other people to test out and build upon. Or maybe you're not a developer. You haven't, you don't want to make every skill yourself. Again, you can go on there and just try stuff that other people are creating.
Right. Yeah. Some people aren't going to have any sort of background in development, but they still want this. And, you know, we've grown very accustomed to, you know, being able to use our smartphone, let's say, to pull up a preset and send it over to whatever we're working with, and boom, now it magically has this new capability. It's kind of crazy when you think about it. Like 20 years ago, that would have been so magical, and now, like, we've just grown so used to that sort of convenience and ease.
Yep, and it's really important, right? Because if you think about your phone, most of the apps on your phone aren't written by Apple or Google.
Right.
They're written by third parties.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's awesome. So, okay, let's talk about kind of the innate capabilities of what we have here. Obviously, we have like this LED screen with eyes. Are other things appearing there throughout the use? I guess that's up to the developer, right? Like maybe they can swap out the eyes for something completely different. Could they do true telepresence the way you were talking?
Oh, absolutely. Yep. Yeah, pretty much. You know, when we think about the robot now, on one side, it can be you know, let's use the iPhone as an example, where it's can be quite locked down. A lot of things are sandboxed. It's very safe. That's on one side of the spectrum. On the other side, you can do whatever you want. We're more on that side, especially now, because we're focusing on developers as our target customer, not necessarily that end consumer that just wants the robot to do something out of the box. So we're more on that side of expandability. So yeah, exactly. Like things like the face, we have a personality in the robot. You'll be able to create your own personality. Like I want the personality of Ted from the bear in that movie. Like that's the personality I want in my robot.
and maybe even throwing different voices in there. Maybe Morgan Freeman.
Yeah, exactly. different voices, different eyes. And you could put Data on there as well. If you're doing telepresence, you could show the person you're talking to's face.
Sure.
Yeah, all kinds of different things.
Interesting. Obviously, this has a lot of personality, largely because I think I read something a couple of months ago that was about the difference, you know, all the different robots that are out there, and how the shape of the eyes determines a lot as far as how a user or a person that owns it or interacts with it, like how they detect whether a robot is mean or very personable or blank, whatever the case may be. What are your thoughts on this? Because I imagine a lot of thought went into, you know, the facial qualities of this robot, because you want it to not come across as a menacing robot. And quite frankly, it's so cute. It would be very hard to do that. But I'm sure you put the certain type of eyes on there, and it would change the outlook entirely.
Oh, completely, yeah. And it's silly how many different iterations we went through on the eyes, and how we're just so tired of it. We're trying to find, like you said, it's so subtle.
Yeah, it is.
It's so subtle. And talk to a lot of character artists of what features of a face or a body convey the most emotion. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting. I completely didn't expect this, but one of the top two were eyebrows,
right.
And the other one was how far you sit forward or back, sort of your, which kind of is your stance. And that's not something that I had even considered before I started talking to people.
So by that you mean right now the Misty 2 is standing very vertical.
Right.
If there was any sort of a lean forward, does that give off a more menacing quality, or what is the sense there that someone would detect?
Again, I think it's emotion, maybe showing curiosity or sitting back, or you leaning into something. And that's not something that we ended up putting into Misty 2, just because of the sort of technical challenges to actuate that. Certainly thinking about that for future robots.
Having some sort of a rotational point at the body, so it can kind of lean in, but the head can still stay fixed.
Yep.
That's interesting. I hadn't thought about that either. But I mean, when I think about, you know, human to human conversation, like when you're talking to someone and they lean in, you know, it shows that they're really connected with you and that they're listening and that they're wanting more. So, I mean, and that just illustrates kind of how far we probably have to go with robotics to get to that point. And I'm sure once we get there, we start seeing more of, like you said, more humanoid robots, because they're really reflecting what humans are used to seeing and makes humans more comfortable.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's cool. So we got the screen with the eyes up here, obviously, at the very top. We could think of it as a hat or visor, but we have some technology in here. It looks like a couple of cameras, maybe room detection. Talk a little bit about what the capabilities of the visor.
Yeah, so in the visor, we have a 3D depth sensor. We were working with a company called Occipital, and they have some really good technology on basically generating that map and navigating and what we call localization, which is the robot knowing where it is in that space. Mm-hmm. So it's a sensor. So there's basically it emits like some infrared light, and then it detects that light, and it can give you a basically what's called a point cloud. So it's just a lot of points mm-hmm. and the distance to those points. And as the robot moves around, again, it can generate a 3D model of your space.
Sure. Is it storing that model? Like as it wanders through your living room for the 100th time, yep. at that point, it's already familiar with the layout of the room, right? Versus the first time. Or is it just detecting this on the fly no matter what environment it's in?
It's a little of both. So it is storing a map of your space because you would want a map for navigation sure. or you want to be able to say, hey, robot, like go to the kitchen or go to the living room. So it knows where those different points are. And then it can annotate that map with different things that it finds. Or you can manually annotate it. Like you could say, you know, this is my front door so that the robot knows that maybe it should wait there for when you're getting home from work because mm-hmm. you wrote some skill that you... you know, tells you something when you get home from work. And then we take that data, again, on the robot itself, and we abstract it to different ways, so not necessarily just a 3D model, but we give you a 2D floor plan of your space.
Okay.
And then on the other side, it is changing the map as things are updated. You move, you know, you reorganize your living room or you move a chair around. There are things that it's seeing that are... that'll update its map with that new information.
Right. Yeah. Your chair's not going to always stay in the same place or the ottoman or whatever. It's there are things that are fixed, the walls and you know roughly the furniture, but then there are variables within that.
Yep. And then there's also a high resolution camera in that visor as well. Mm-hmm. And we use that for computer vision. So tracking faces, recognizing your face. So it knows who you are. If you're a new person, the robot hasn't seen. Tracking people so it can follow you around. And then, again, because we're so open, we basically put libraries on there like TensorFlow.
Sure.
Which is an open source library for doing machine learning training. So you could train your own objects. So you could train it to recognize your pet, or maybe you have some object in your house that you want to be important for the robot. You could show it a lot of images of that thing and then train the robot on and then you use that within your skill.
And that's something that a developer is going to be able to do more than just like a consumer. Like you said, this is really tailored more for developers to get their minds going and get them active. But this isn't the kind of thing where a consumer says, I got me a Misty 2 and I trained my dog, the images of my dog. That would have to be a skill that a developer actually created to tap into things like TensorFlow to do that, right?
Yep, exactly. And we're not sure how long it's going to take to get from, you know, it took a while, but from when the Apple II came out to when really consumers started buying personal computers, I mean, it was 3 or 4 years before there was enough applications out there that it really started to go into that market.
Sure.
And we're not sure how long that's going to take for Misty.
Yeah.
To get from the developers to then the point when a consumer could say, robots, like, that sounds cool. What are they? What does it do? Oh, here's the 100 different skills that are in the skill store that they can just, you know, sort of one button. Like, I want the one to play with my pet, and I want the one to be the security bot, and I want the one to read stories to my kid at bedtime, things like that.
How much storage? I mean, I'm sure there's a flat number of storage that's in there, but how does that translate into the general amount of skills that you could have loaded on here? Because I know in computers, again, it's the prime example. You know, at some point down the line, you know, years and years ago, when computers were still a novel thing to me, once I realized I could get, you know, buy games and applications and everything, it was my mission to load it with as much stuff as I possibly could. And we all know, you know, in some cases that can kind of hinder the performance of a computer. How does that translate to the Misty? Are you able to, like, you're going to see all these awesome capabilities that it can do, and you're going to want them all on there, whether you're going to use them all or not. You know, that's going to be the my thought, anyways.
I don't see an issue with that with Misty 2, but I think we'll just have to see what types of things people create.
Yeah.
I guess we'll see. But I don't. Yeah, you should be able to load, I mean, hundreds of different skills on there.
Yeah,
it's quite small right now.
Yeah, you know, my other kind of comparison is I have the Google Home throughout our house, and as you know, Assistant, and I think it's the same with Echo skills. I mean, they could do so many things. That's great. You just have to remember that it can do so many things and understand the syntax to make those things happen and everything. But
yep. And it is, and I have the same issue, right?
Yeah.
I downloaded a bunch of skills, but then you forget about them because it's not really, tangible. It's not like your phone where you load up the home screen and you see icons associated with all your apps. And as you're flipping through, you remember these apps that you installed on your phone years ago, maybe.
Sure.
Part of what we're working on with Misty 2, with the personality side of it, is that Misty will actually initiate skills.
Awesome.
Based on her personality. So when you install a skill on it, it doesn't necessarily, you know, have to be, hey, Misty, play with my dog. The robot actually has different hooks and will resurface skills that she hasn't done in a while. And
that's great.
And we'll be able to sort of initiate these things on our own.
Yeah, the dog walks into the room. Misty's not doing anything. Misty's like, cool, I'll play with the dog.
Right.
Or the cat walks in the room. That's probably a better example. It's, you know, wearing the laser arm.
Right.
It's like, sure, I'll run you around a little bit and tire you out.
Yep.
That's great. That's a great way to kind of surface some of those capabilities. And that in turn really starts to help bridge that gap of, you know, the static piece of technology that is there to answer my requests versus like a human, you know, has a mind of its own, does right. things when it thinks it's time to do it or it's the right time to do it. Yep. You mentioned a couple of the chips on board. One, in looking around, I realized one is running Android 7, and then one is dealing with Windows IoT.
Yep.
Is that, and I imagine that's because developers are developing for different things, so having both on board allows for greater capability, greater support, right?
Yeah, a little bit. Most of the operating system, unless a developer wants to get really crazy and go low level, most of the operating system is abstracted. Like they're just writing JavaScript code and they wouldn't even know what operating system it's running on.
Okay.
But it was a couple different reasons. We did Android and Windows, lots of technical stuff. But Microsoft has been really awesome to work with on Windows 10 IoT. So the team there has been great. Their tools are really good for development. So mm-hmm. it was one of the reasons that we chose that operating system. And then on the Android side, it's a matter of support. There is a lot of support out there for computer vision and things like that were running on that processor. So it made sense to use Android.
Things like TensorFlow,
exactly.
TensorFlow Lite, or is it TensorFlow Lite or is it TensorFlow?
I would have to ask my engineer.
Okay.
On that one. Yep.
Yeah, if it's a, I believe TensorFlow Lite is what's working with Android specifically, but I'm not a developer, so I could be completely wrong. And I mean, in the initial amount of time between the release of the Misty 1 and where you're at right now, you know, obviously developers have been getting the developer edition, the Misty 1, in their hands, and they've started to play around with it. Are you starting to kind of see the reaction and the response from developers from a creation standpoint that you were hoping for? And what are some of the really unique things that you're starting to see come out of that?
Yeah, so we're just getting a few of the Misty 1s out. Of course, we're in the middle of a 30-day campaign to get Misty 2 out into the market. So you can go on our website to get more information on that. The Misty 1, we've shipped a few of them out. We've done some hackathons. We call them robothons at our office. Mm-hmm. And what kind of stuff have people created? So there's like one guy is working on a assistant for conferences that the robot can take you around. It's sort of it would also work in an office, like as a receptionist.
Okay.
So you walk in, it sees a face. Who are you? You know, who are you here to see? Sort of the AI piece.
Yeah.
Voice assistant. Oh, I'm here to see Ian. And then it looks at, you know, wants to tie it in with Google Calendar. So it would see my calendar. It would say, oh, you have a 2 p.m. appointment.
Right.
Come to conference room 2. And then the robot uses our navigation system to drive and take them to conference room 2. And then it sends me a text. My guest is there. Lots of ideas at the last one. We had not necessarily things people had created, but things we asked people what they wanted to create if they had more time. everything from just sort of fun games like a hide and seek game to one kid wanted to thought, well, you know, this form factor is a little small. Like, could we put it in a bigger form factor that would maybe be better for an office? Mm-hmm. And again, to allowing Misty to be really open, we designed all the software and electronics to be pretty agnostic to what form factor it's in. Mm-hmm. So you could absolutely prototype stuff on this form factor, but then take all the inside out and put it in something bigger that would be better in a retail environment or an office. We had ideas for, well, I mentioned earlier, like somebody wanted the robot to, you know, get their kids like, hey, it's time to go to bed. Like, let's read a story. Kind of the bedtime skill. We had,
look, mom and dad are busy. The robot's going to have to read you your bedtime story tonight. I'm sorry.
Right. Wasn't it like, I was watching that Silicon Valley episode the other day when, like, you know, the kid like wouldn't listen. It was whatever his name is, like the cars, the billionaire guy. You know, his kid wouldn't listen to him, but he listened to the AI.
That's right. In the house. That's right. And yeah, that show's depressing in a whole different light, as much as it is funny.
Yep.
Cool. So, and then let's see here. I also read that the Misty 2 and other is working in collaboration with other hardware potentially. We were talking very early on about, you know, your work with Sphero, the Misty 2 and the Sphero SPRK Plus. What is that, and explain how that works?
So it gets it's another way, because we're already shipping the Sphero Spark, that we can get mm-hmm. a robot to people so they can start playing around with it earlier. Mm-hmm. You can program Spark with a block-based language. Same for Misty. We use Blockly. So you can just drag a bunch of blocks in, so you don't even have to know how to code to program Misty. And same with the Spark. And then you can also program both of them in JavaScript if you want to take it to that next level and learn to start to code. And it's just a Spark is a great product. It's in well over 10,000 schools worldwide now, and it was super cool to see when we launched that program more around like 2012. Kids that were, you know, I've gotten several messages from kids who were young back in 2012, mm-hmm. now going to college and studying engineering. I've had a couple people ask me, you know, hey, like I really love, you know, on Twitter and stuff, like I really loved this when I was a kid, like what major should I go into, things like that. So that's super, super fun.
That's got to be really rewarding to know. And, you know, again, it goes back to education, but knowing that, you know, based on your history and your experience and kind of the light bulb moment that seems to take place when people realize that this kind of stuff is possible and that there is a future.
Yep.
In it. And man, before it seems so unattainable, right? Building robotics, when I was younger, I was fascinated by robots and I was fascinated by the idea of it. But anytime I actually, you know, as a kid thought, well, I'm going to build a robot then, I felt like it was so far outside of my depth that it was, you know, it was on the level of someone, you know, like a rocket scientist or something, you know, like, I don't know who ends up becoming a rocket scientist, but it takes a special someone to do it. Right. And now, I mean, you know, obviously we're starting to see that it's a lot more obtainable, maybe not creating a robot from the ground up. Not everybody can just do that and throw it together, but certainly more and more people have what they need to understand how to kind of create an identity around a robot or how to make it do the things that they want to do. And even that was science fiction 20 years ago.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, super cool stuff like Raspberry Pis and Arduinos is one of the reasons we made this Arduino backpack.
And this Arduino backpack fits on in place of the case of the cover that's on here right now.
Yeah. So the backpack just comes apart. And you can take your existing, they call them Arduino shields. So there's hundreds of these different shields you can buy. You could try plugging this one in, see what happens.
Oh, okay.
See if it powers up. So you can take existing. So this is a project that I just found online. It was with a touch screen that I bought off Adafruit for like $20. And I just loaded in their sample program. I mean, a kid could figure this out. It's so easy.
Sure.
And you can draw on it. But you could create your own. You could create your own interface for MISTI with the touchscreen on the back using an Arduino. And this is stuff that there's hundreds of thousands of sample projects online and lots of, you know, huge community of people sharing information. Maker Faire, I mean, you know, probably half the projects there are using things like an Arduino. But yeah, just making it really easy for people to integrate. Like you said, it's so much easier now than
so
it was
much more attainable.
You know, back when we were kids.
Well, yeah, and I mean, you know, and again, when I was a kid, you know, there were the electronics breadboard sets that you could get at Radio Shack, and now, like, the analog to that really seems to be like the Raspberry Pi, which is basically you're getting into the realm of creating. You know, these crazy things that just seem so far outside. Like, I can imagine the screen being like if you have your robot, you know, managing a playlist in your home and it always showing the album art there or something like that.
Yeah.
You could do that. Sure. Why not? Cool stuff. Let's take a quick break and then we'll dive into this a little bit more. And I have a couple of questions, if you're cool, to kind of talking about like the future of robotics as a whole and in general from your perspective.
Great.
Really curious to kind of dive into that. Before we do that, let's thank the sponsor of this episode, and that is FreshBooks. Streamline your business operations with FreshBooks. FreshBooks makes it easy to kind of manage all of these transactions that you have when you're running your own business. The easy to use cloud accounting software built specifically for you, the small business owner. You can quickly access accounting reports, things that you'll need like outstanding balances, total profit in the FreshBooks dashboard, send professional looking invoices in seconds, and they're actionable invoices. So when your client gets the invoice, they can pay directly from those invoices. Really nice. You can keep tabs on your business no matter where you are with the FreshBooks mobile app for Android and iOS. And also, of course, FreshBooks automatically connects to your bank account and updates expenses every day. You can import all of those expenses with a CSV file or automatic import, or even take a picture of a receipt, upload it, and then you let FreshBooks do the rest. You can manage all the members of your team that have access in the My Team page. Add team members as business partner, basic employee, or contractor. It really covers the bases depending on which permissions you want to grant each team member. Create proposals with rich text content and images and request your clients' e-signatures as they accept those proposals. Non-invoice income also in there, like online sales, ads, that can all be tracked by logging them as other income. And with FreshBooks, there's no need to chase clients for payments. You can accept online payments directly from your invoice. Like I said, get paid an average of 2 times faster. You can see if they've been sent, see if they've been viewed and not sent, paid, overdue invoices, all that stuff. Bill for time by client, by specific project. You can send invoices, estimates, and proposals in all sorts of languages, Spanish, Dutch, German, and Portuguese. And FreshBooks recently announced a collaboration with Microsoft. That's rolling out this summer. Outlook users can view and pay FreshBooks invoices regardless of what device they view it on from with Microsoft Outlook payments. Outlook users will be able to view invoice details in their email and then click a button to pay now. If your credit card's registered with Outlook payments, you can pay in one click. Super easy. Join 10 million people using FreshBooks to painlessly send invoices, track time, and capture expenses, and get back to doing what you love. Try FreshBooks free for 30 days at freshbooks.com/triangulation and enter triangulation in the How Did You Hear About Us section. That's freshbooks.com/triangulation. And we thank FreshBooks for their support of this show. So let's talk a little bit about kind of the longevity, the life cycle. Like, I know, obviously, this is early on. This is not even in the hands, and the MISTI 2 specifically is not in the hands of anyone yet. That happens at the end of the year. MISTI 1, it sounds like a few people are getting their hands on that. Is there a bigger rollout of the MISTI 1 leading up to the MISTI 2, or at this point, are you just kind of all in on the MISTI 2 and you want people to just buckle down, get in on this, and spend the next few years developing for it?
Yeah. I mean, we did do one of our campaign tiers for our 30-day campaign that's going on now. Mm-hmm. We did a bundle, a Getting Started Now bundle. So you actually get a MISTI 1 now, shipping around June 1st, and then you'll get the Misty 2 when that comes out in December. So, yeah, we definitely want lots of people hopefully getting Misty 1s now and just programming stuff, because like I said, it's all the same electronics, a lot of the same software. So the skills that you write on the Misty 1 will transfer over to the Misty 2 when that comes out. It'll be great to have sort of a lot of launch titles already out there, launch skills for when Misty 2 hits them, starts shipping.
Sure. And you're right now, at least, you're going the crowdfunding route, which I saw doing very, very well on. It says 90% of the stretch goal, 14 days at the time of this recording, 14 days remaining. And that's a 50% discount on the development kit. I'm assuming you didn't go this route because you needed to fund it this way. This is just a really great way to drive interest. And by the way, 50% off is a pretty darn awesome discount. Yep. If you wait one day too long and you want to do this, you're going to be kicking yourself that you didn't act sooner.
Yeah, a good price. And it was really to build the community. It wasn't necessarily, again, you know, we're venture, you know, venture backed. Like we didn't need to do this, to ship the product.
You just got a new round of funding very recently, right?
It was a year ago.
Okay.
So last May was when we closed our Series A. But yeah, it was really to get crowdfunding is a great way to bring people together and create a community and have a community that we can ask questions to. Like we're just working on some sticker packs for Misty, and we were able to go out to that community, ask them what they thought would be the coolest sticker pack for it, if they had other ideas.
Mm-hmm.
So really involving people in the development of the product.
Awesome. Really cool stuff. And then what about updates? Actually, this is kind of important, because we hear a lot in the news about, you know, the Internet of Things and how insecure things are. They aren't kept up to date. There's vulnerabilities discovered all the time, and a lot of these companies that are pushing out these like IoT devices that are very inexpensive IoT devices, they just aren't getting the support on the back end to keep up to date from a security standpoint. Yep. I mean, I imagine this is different. There's so many ways in which this could be updated to stay up, stay secure from that perspective. But what is the plan there? What can people, developers, expect if they get this?
Yeah, so we're rolling out updates for Misty 1 every couple weeks, and we'll keep that, if not even more frequently, for Misty 2. So perhaps even weekly updates, software updates to patch different things that we're finding, fix bugs, add new functionality. But security and privacy is obviously very important for robots, especially when you have, when you look at it, yes, it is, has a camera on it and it is mobile and it's sort of always on. It needs to be very, very, very secure.
Mm-hmm.
But as we're going towards, because we're not shipping to consumers right now, we made a conscious decision. And again, when you look at that spectrum of over here, you could do whatever you want. And over here is, say, the iPhone, where people have to authorize every little thing, and you have to authorize every app to use your camera and stuff like that, and everything's very sandboxed, but it's also very limiting. It limits the number of applications you can build, and you can build lots of applications, but there is things that Apple doesn't let you do because you don't get that raw data.
Mm-hmm.
So we made a conscious decision to be more on that side of open at this stage of the product. Allow people to be really creative around it and build lots of different things, but we are consciously building the infrastructure and the product so that for security and privacy, so that as we go more towards consumer, when more skills are out there and we're like, okay, let's start getting this out to people who maybe aren't developers, then we can start flipping on those security knobs to sandbox things. And yeah, probably some of the skills might not work at that point, or maybe they will now have to be updated so that they require a person to authorize different functionality, because it has to go there eventually, right?
Sure.
But again, we want people to be super creative around it now and do lots of different things, test things out, and see what's cool on robots.
Awesome. So, real quick before we kind of wrap things up. Well, I guess first of all, how can people find this? And then I'll ask you kind of like my forward thinking question on the future of robotics. But if people are interested in getting in, and I would encourage anyone interested to do it in the next, you know, in the next week or so that you make sure that you hit the deadline. Where can they go online, and kind of what exactly can they expect from a price standpoint to kind of get in on the ground level?
Yeah, so it's on our website, mistyrobotics.com. For your viewers, we have another $100 off the price.
Wow.
So
okay.
mistyrobotics.com/twit.
That's awesome.
Get an extra discount.
That is really nice.
And we have all the information on there. There's a video at the top. We have other videos, like you can watch the teardown video if you want to see all the circuit boards and how easy it is to get inside Misty if you want to. You know, if you're somebody more advanced and want to get at that level, or just see what's inside,
yeah,
different components. I have another video coming out soon that talks about all the ways you can customize Misty if you're a hardware person, and then talking about all the different types of skills you can create. But yeah, it's all online, and definitely check out our community too. Even if you know, we'd love people, even if you're not going to buy a Misty, to come hang out with us. If you like technology and robots, go to community.mistyrobotics.com. Lots of people just posting stuff and different ideas and thinking about the future of robots, right? Where are we going with this in the next few years and even longer, 10, 20, 30 years? Where is robots going?
Interesting. Yeah, because, I mean, you know, not everybody in the world is going to buy one, but I bet you everybody has an opinion as far as what would be useful to them. And yeah, you communicate that in a forum like that, someone might actually build it. That thing that you wanted, might actually happen. That's a really, really cool way to go about it.
Yeah.
Didn't have to do any of the hard work. Somebody else did it for you. So we're about out of time, but I'm really kind of curious from your perspective. You've lived your life watching this evolution of, you know, being a kid fascinated with robots and, you know, breaking apart pieces of technology to satisfy your curiosity, to now where we're starting to see things like Boston Dynamics robots, you know, and some of those, it's amazing what some of them can do, but it's also a little unsettling to some people. Drone technology, which I guess it at its core is not in and of itself a robot, but it very well could be a flying robot. What are you encouraged by the direction that we're headed? Is this kind of satisfying your vision of the future, or do you think things can be improved? What are your thoughts on kind of the future of robotics based on what we're seeing right now?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to figure out in robots, and a lot of questions that we'll have to answer. Of course, there's these, you know, quite impressive but far out from a consumer perspective,
sure,
like the stuff that Boston and Dynamics is doing with Atlas and robots like that. You know, I think robots pretty, not even in the distant future. Like, if you think about people and families, the two biggest purchases we have right now are a home and a vehicle.
Yeah.
And we're moving away from vehicles. I was reading last night on the plane that they're going to be soon doing fully autonomous, no safety driver tests in Texas of autonomous cars.
Mm-hmm. I read that too.
And we're close to that, and people, I mean, other than recreation, people aren't going to buy vehicles in the future. It's all just going to be shared, and you're going to call it up, and your autonomous car is going to show up, and you know, you're not going to buy a vehicle. I think robots is going to be that next big purchase. And they're going to get more advanced, right? They got to be bigger, but they're going to be able to fold our laundry and cook food and, like, clean our house, and we're not going to have to spend our Saturday doing chores like that. We're going to be, unless we want to, right? Maybe they're relaxing for people, but we're going to be able to do the things that we want to do, or spend time with our kids or our families, or go out and go mountain biking or whatever. But you're going to spend, you know, the robot is going to be that big purchase. It's going to be like Rosie from the Jetsons. I think that's where we're going with this space.
Mm-hmm.
But again, Misty is small. She's very cute, friendly, want to see what kind of skills people start to create. And then with future versions, we'll start to, you know, make her a little bit bigger and start to add arms and other stuff. So really, really excited about where consumers, you know, the consumer readiness for a device like Misty is at, and just the amount of technology that you can get now is incredible.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is something, and it's something special to see the Misty 2 here in person and to get to talk with you in person. I really appreciate you coming up to the studio to be here today, because it's one thing to talk to people on Skype. It's another thing entirely in person. I really appreciate that.
Last time I was up here with BB-8, it was super fun, and
yeah.
As soon as I heard about this, I was like, yeah, definitely going up there.
Awesome. And you're going to the Maker Faire this weekend. I wish you the very best of luck showing off the Misty 2.
Yeah, if you're in the Maker Bay, come by Maker Faire. Find us and find our booth.
Awesome. That is this weekend. Well, I guess it's today.
Yep.
Yeah, starting today.
Today through Sunday.
Today, the 18th through the 20th. So if you're in the Bay Area, check it out. Right on, Ian. It's really nice talking with you.
Thanks.
Thank you so much. Ian Bernstein, founder and head of product at Misty Robotics, mistyrobotics.com. Thanks again. And best of luck this weekend. We do triangulation every Friday. Normally we do it right around 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. This was recorded a little bit earlier in the day, but generally you can go to twit.tv/live at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, and catch us live for the recording. But no matter what, if you're subscribed to the show, you're going to get it in your podcast catcher or on YouTube, wherever you find your podcast. And if you want to find all that information, you can head to the show pages, twit.tv/triangulation. You can find all the episodes that we've recorded. This is episode 347. There's a lot in the past archives, so if you haven't watched each and every one, you've got a lot of catching up to do, and I encourage you to do so. I'm Jason Howell. Thanks once again for inviting me into your ears for an hour here with Ian, and we will see you next time on another episode of Triangulation. Take care, everyone.